Morning, to everyone. It's impressive to see such a gathering at this particular time of year when hardly anyone is even present in body, let alone in mind. I see that they've done a number of improvements here since I was last speaking here. Whether the shir will be any improved is another matter, but at least the other shir could seem. Our subject this morning is Yehuda and Yosef, the clash of titans. This week's parasha begins with the dramatic, one of the most dramatic encounters probably in all of the Torah literature. Last week's parsha ends on what we would call in America a cliffhanger, and the narrative continues with this fateful confrontation, V'yigash elav Yehuda, v'yom abi Adoni. Yehuda and the rest of the brothers, of course, are in mortal fear. They're devastated by the sequence of events. And Yehuda presents a heart-rending petition to try to persuade this apparently callous and devious viceroy to give them a break and to have some heart. He recognizes, of course, that they have been framed. He knows that Binyamin is innocent, and he comes up with every kind of argument to appeal to the emotions and to the sentiment of this man, of course, not realizing that it is Yosef. What I want to look at in particular is one specific turn of phrase. He begins by recounting the events of the recent hours, and then going back to their previous visit as well. And he says, I'd like to say a few words into your ear. You asked us whether we have a father or we have a brother, and we say yes, we have an elderly father, and the other zukunin katan, and a younger son, the achiv meis, meaning that the father has a son who is much younger, and the brother of this very young son has died. And he alone, meaning that youngest brother, alone is left from his mother. Because, as we know, Yaakov had more than one wife, but from that particular wife he had only two sons, and one son is dead, and he alone is left. A very evocative, very somehow compelling statement. To say Achiv Meis, of course, which is not completely true. I mean, it's not at all true, in fact. But even according to their understanding, they didn't know for certain that the brother had died. But what's very interesting is this turn of phrase, V'vaseh levado. I see my good friend Rani Joseph here. I'm sure he could answer this question, being the expert of Bal Korah. But I wonder who else knows where we find that expression, V'vaseh levado. There's only one other place. Right. It says by Yaakov, Yivaseh Yaakov Levado. The Baal HaTurim says that this turn of phrase, Yivaseh Levado, is found only with Yaakov and here by Binyamin. Yivaseh Hu Levado, and it says Yivaseh Yaakov Levado. Halo Davahu. It's unusual that, or perhaps not unusual because it's just coincidental, but it truly is noteworthy. The Baal HaTurim draws our attention to it. So the Bible truly says, "Masham lemelchama afkam hichin etzmo lemelchama." Just as there, we say, "Yaakov levado v'yavek ish imo," as Yaakov was assaulted, was attacked by some anonymous assailant. So here too, v'yavaseh hu levado, it hints to the idea that Yehuda is prepared to fight, which of course Rashi already tells us. It hints to that as well. Bi Adoni, it's a kind of. You're just like Paro, which is a double entendre, you know, a diplomatic double entendre. At the surface, he's saying, I admire you, I respect you, I venerate you, just like Paro. But of course, the unstated beneath the surface is, if you start up with me, I'll kill you and Paro. So Yehuda has a kind of a two-pronged language, which of course is deliberately so. But there must be something deeper to that as well, that association between Binyamin and Yaakov. Yivaseh hu levado, Yivaseh Yaakov levado. It's actually remarkable to consider that in a certain way, and it's published to us. Binyamin is the only son of Yaakov who is his absolute son. I don't mean biologically, but I mean in terms of character. All of the sons of Yaakov, in a certain sense, they have an admixture of other influences or of other kind of origins. Let me explain what I mean. Yaakov had four partners, if you like, but the Shvachos, of course, he never intended to marry, just things developed in that way. Even Leah, as we know, he didn't want Leah. He had no interest in Leah initially. His soulmate was only Rachel. Rachel was the one whom he saw at first, and Rachel is the one whom he wanted to marry. Rachel is the one whom he proposed to work 7 years on her behalf. Rachel is the natural partner of Yaakov. And Rachel bore only two sons, only Yosef, of course, and Binyamin. Now everybody knows that Yosef is the continuity of Yaakov, that Eilat Eilat Yaakov, Yosef, and we all know Ben Zikunim Hu and all of that. But actually, even Yosef has a certain admixture of Esav in him. That's very what I mean. You know, the parallels between Yosef and Esav is very interesting. Yosef was born to Rachel, but according to a very interesting medrash, Yosef, which Rashi hints to, Yosef was first conceived in the womb of Leah. That when Rachel first conceived and was able to bear a child, she was going to bear a daughter. And that would have been probably, we have no women here, so I'm not, I can say without fear of insulting anybody here exactly, maybe someone here has only daughters though, I don't want to be patronizing, but you know, it's just kind of, it would be a consolation prize if she had had a daughter, okay? It would have been better than not having any child at all. I'm saying in terms of the destiny of Kaliyah, so of course girls or boys are equally wonderful, but if Rachel had born a daughter, I think it's fair to say she would have been a little bit disappointed. And therefore, Api Chazal, actually, Dina was conceived in her womb, but in a supernatural precursor to genetic manipulation that would happen in our own days, Dina and Yosef were switched in the womb. And that, as a result, Yosef, who was born to Rachel, but there is a certain connection to Yosef, to Esav. So you say, what do you mean Esav? What does Leah have to do with Esav? Of course, we know Leah has a lot to do with Esav. That Leah thought that she would be the zivug of Esav, and she was crying all the time. Actually, Leah and Esav have a lot to do with one another. Leah had the capacity to bring out the best in Esav, but she didn't want that job. That's why she was fortunate to marry Yaakov instead, because Yaakov himself also acquired some of the qualities of Esav, Atzad HaTov. How is that possible? How did that happen? How can we say that Yaakov acquired some of the qualities of Esav? Why should it be? There's a very good reason why. Because Yaakov received the brachos that were destined for Esav. All of those brachos of material success, of prosperity and achievement in the Olam HaGeshem, V'yitein lecha Elokim mitam ha-shamayim mishmanei ha-aretz, that was destined for Esav. But Yaakov received those brachos, which means that Yaakov acquired some of the talent of Esav, some of the skill, some of the success, some of the capacity to succeed in Olam HaZeh, which was not the natural, was not the initial area of talent of Yaakov, but he acquired it because of those brachos. So therefore he acquired a kind of dual personality. The spirituality of Yaakov with the capacity for success in business, if you like, of Esav. And that is why Yaakov eventually married not only Rachel, but Leah as well. Because that's how Leah became an appropriate zivug for him. But she was never his original intended. Of course, Tapei Shmaya, it was all part of the plan. But in terms of what Yaakov himself felt, his natural soulmate was Rachel. And therefore we find that Yosef, in some ways has some of the qualities of Esav al tzad hatov. Yosef hu hamashbir. Yosef is the one who provides for Klal Yisrael, not only Klal Yisrael, provides for all of Mitzrayim and for all of the surrounding areas as well. That is an ability, that is a capacity, that is an endowment associated with the gift of Esav. Not Esav as the ruffian and Esav as the adversary, but Esav as the person who is capable of achieving great success in Olam Hazeh. In other words, Yosef and Esav are natural counterparts, and of course natural adversaries. And that's why Yosef is the antidote to Esav. And this also is well known. Rashi says, Beferishu, when Yosef was born, Yaakov realized, hey, it's time to go home. Why? So what? Because Yosef is born, therefore why is it time to go home? So Rashi says, but the pasuk says, "V'haya beis Yaakov eish uveis Yosef lahava uveis Esav lekash." That beis Yaakov will be a flame, will be a fire, and beis Yosef will be a flame. The uveis Esav lekash, and Esav will be like straw. When fire catches hold of straw, it consumes it very, very quickly. Esav is, Rashi says, Yosef is sitno shel Esav. Yosef is the one who has the capacity to neutralize and to overcome Esav. And that is because Yosef is like the counterpart to Esau. But of course, and that's why it says that Vayisnu'u so, that Yosef's, the other brothers hated Yosef, Vayisnu'u so. It's a very strong language. To say that they were jealous of him, we can understand, because the father favored him, with Ksonas Pasim, and all of those things, and the dreams. So we can understand why the brothers would. It should say the pasuk says that Yaakov loved Yosef, and therefore the brothers hated him. So, you know, it's superficial. You could say, well, because they saw the brother loved him, so therefore they hated him. But it's not in keeping with the character of the Shvatim that they should be so petty and so vindictive because their father loves him, so therefore they hate him. The fact that they hated Yosef is only because they associated Yosef with Esav. As the pasuk says in the beginning of Malachi, Ve'ohaves Yaakov ves Esav sanesi. And that's why, by the way, it says that Leah was sanua. Leah felt that she was hated. She wasn't hated, but she felt that she was still regarded as the one who is the natural partner for the one who is hated, and that is Esau. So Yosef has an echo of Esau. Not al tzad hara, only al tzad hatov. He's the antidote to Esau. He has the qualities of Esau, but he uses them the tov. But even so, there is some association, and the fact, as we said, that she was conceived initially in the womb of Leah, and Leah is associated with the outgoingness of Esau. There's only one of the brothers who has nothing to do with Esau. There's only one of the brothers who is so completely, so to speak, disassociated from Esau that he didn't even bow down to Esau. That's Binyamin, because Binyamin wasn't born then. Binyamin is the son of Rachel. Binyamin never had anything to do with Leah, even according to the metaphysical origins. Binyamin is the one son of Yaakov who is the absolute continuity of Yaakov, who is the product of Yaakov and Rachel. And Binyamin, therefore, is levado, just like Yaakov is levado. And that is why Yaakov is like obsessed with the safety of Binyamin. Because the story is so familiar to us, so it doesn't necessarily strike us, because the words are so very, very well known to us. But if you think about it, if you look at these parashiyos with new eyes, you'd be amazed, why is it that Yaakov is so obsessed with the safety of Binyamin? Why is it that he's prepared to send 10 sons to Mitzrayim, but not Binyamin? Now, if he sent one son or two sons to Mitzrayim, to Lishbor Bar, okay, we could say, he loves all of his sons, he sends the minimum, he doesn't want to send someone on his own, so he sends two, or he sends three. But he sends 10, he's prepared to send all 10 of them, but not Binyamin. He won't send Binyamin. And Yehuda has to remonstrate with him and to say, you know, if we told you that he won't, the man won't allow us to return unless we take Binyamin with us, and if he hadn't been procrastinating, we could have brought Baron back twice. That's what he did to Yaakov. And Yaakov, with the utmost reluctance, eventually is prepared to send Binyamin, and with such misgivings and with such a feeling of destiny weighing upon him. Why is he so obsessed with the safety of Binyamin? Well, this is why. Because Binyamin is actually the embodiment of Yaakov, the true Yaakov, without any influence or admixture of, I don't want to say external forces, but influences or sources of influence which are somehow outside, beyond the absolute specific Yaakov Rachel combination. All of the other Shvatim have aspects in which derive maybe from other sources. Yaakov is, as we've seen, fixated and almost obsessed with the survival of Binyamin. And it's interesting that we find this in later generations as well. Binyamin had a descendant called Mordechai. Mordechai lo kam velo zak. Mordechai is the only one in the whole generation, at least as far as we know specifically, who refused to show any honor to Haman. There are many reasons for that, but part of it is because Mordechai is ish yimini, and because he's descended from Binyamin, there's something genetic within him. He doesn't bow down to Esav or to descendant of Esav, just as Binyamin himself didn't. Because Binyamin has that independence, that, I don't know, not so much pride, that he has that if you like, self-respect, that he will not bow down to Esav. And we find in other respects as well, Binyamin has a fierce independence. I don't know if you recall, I'm sure such a learned group recalls the incident, the very unsavory incident narrated in the Sefer Shoftim, Pilegesh Begiva. So, I'm not saying that this accrues to the credit of Shevet Binyamin that much, it probably does not, but the fact of the matter is that when a certain outrage was committed by the people of Shevet Binyamin, and the rest of Kaiser rebuked them and said, you know, you have to deliver unto justice the people responsible for this outrage. And they said, mind your own business. We'll take care of our own justice. So they say, well, we'll go to war with you then to force you. And Binyamin said, okay, we'll go to war. And they did. A civil war. Binyamin against all the other Shvatim. And you know who won? Binyamin. At first. Okay, later on they did overwhelm them. Binyamin has that fierce independence because Binyamin levado, v'yavasehu levado. Binyamin is prepared to take on everybody else because Binyamin is levado. It says Binyamin ze'ev yitrof, which it's true that other the Shvatim are also likened to ferocious animals, but so one of the Mepharshim Hirsch says ze'ev yitrof, not that Binyamin is a wolf that tears apart his prey. But Binyamin ze'ev yitrof. Binyamin will tear apart the wolf. Binyamin will destroy the wolf. In other words, Binyamin is so ferocious, is so fierce, is so formidable, and has such an independent streak, just as Klal Yisrael generally. But the spitz of it is in Binyamin. That independence will take on the world. And it's interesting as well that the first king of Israel came from Shevet Binyamin as well. And more. We know that the destiny of Klal Yisrael is to battle with Amalek. And Amalek is the Reishis Goyim Amalek V'Acharisa De'Oveid. The Amalek, the destruction of Amalek will presage or will somehow herald the final redemption. And it was Binyamin who first had the opportunity to destroy Amalek. It was Binyamin, maybe not first had the opportunity, but in the days of Shaul HaMelech, so he went to war with Agag, king of Amalek, and they clobbered them. They routed Amalek, and they nearly polished them off. And they had the opportunity to kill Agag as well. Shaul had the opportunity. He could have done it so easily. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. And because he didn't do it, it was left to his successor. Now, if you think about it, Binyamin, that is to say, Shaul HaMelech from Sheva Binyamin was the first Melech for Israel. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out. And therefore, the task of leadership fell to which Shevet? Yehuda. And it says right here, Avadecha Arav. What's the Russian? Yehuda reviews with Yosef, of course, not knowing that it is Yosef, the dialogue, and he reviews how father didn't want to send him, and he refused to, and then I had to persuade him. I said, "Vayomer Avinu Shuvu Shivu Lanamak Ocha Benomer Lo Michalare Laredes." We can't go down. Vayitzei Achamiti Vamar Ach Tarof Taraf Velo Ishi Vad Heina. So finally, he says that I can't find it anyway. Again. That's what I'm looking for. I can't find it. Ki avdecha arav etana. Okay, everybody else has found it. I've got the chumash. I can't find it. Okay, you guys should be giving the shiur, not me. Avdecha arav etana. So Yehuda says, you know, I became the guarantor for the nar, and Yehuda is the guarantor. That's why when Binyamin does not succeed in killing Agag, so he loses the Malchus, and it falls instead to Yehuda. And Yehuda has become the guarantor. And that is why, Ad Hayom Hazeh, Klal Yisrael is Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin. That's what we call Yehudim, because we are descended from Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. The other 10 tribes have been lost. Some are looking to find them in Afghanistan and all different other places. I don't know if they've gone to Afghanistan for that reason anymore, but I don't know if you remember, but before Afghanistan strided onto the world stage for other reasons, there was a number of articles in some distinguished media, such as Hamudia and elsewhere, about legends of the 10 tribes and found in Afghanistan and certain things. I mean, over the centuries, nearly every continent, every country on the globe has claimed to have descent from the 10 tribes, including the American Indians as well, and many, many others. But Asas HaShvatim, we don't know what's become of them. Klal Yisrael today is Yehuda and Binyamin. But, you know, I'm not in business, but some other people here are, and you know, when you lend someone money and you ask for a guarantor, so hopefully you'll be able to collect from the debtor. That's the objective of it. Because if he defaults and you have to go to the oreh, to the guarantor, it's going to be a lot harder. I mean, that's what the guarantor is there for. Hopefully you'll collect from the guarantor. At least you won't lose out completely. But collecting from the debtor is may be difficult, but from the guarantor is always going to be harder. Yehuda is the oreh. So Binyamin could have been the one to finish off Amalek completely, and he didn't quite do it. It would have been easy for him. He didn't do it, and therefore it fell to Yehuda. Yehuda is the Arev. Yehuda now is the one who has to try to finish the job that Binyamin didn't quite achieve. So it's in this way that when the Pasuk says V'yavaseh hu levado, it means that Binyamin is the continuity of Yaakov. And this is why Yaakov is so obsessed with the safety of Binyamin, because if Binyamin is lost, then all is lost. So, and Taka, in the future of Kala, so we have Binyamin and Yehuda, who is the Arev for Binyamin. And this exchange, this dialogue between Yehuda and Yosef somehow presages and reflects the clash of titans representing the different forces within Klal Yisrael. Of course, ultimately, it was the Ashkacha that all of the 12 Shvatim, but of course, we've got Levi, a bit of Shevet Levi as well, around also, obviously, Levim and Kohanim, but the 10 Shvatim have been lost, and we're left with primarily Yehuda and Binyamin. And this is the conflict between the Bnei Leah and Bnei Rachel, which unfortunately also has presaged the dissent and the divisions within Klal Yisrael, from which we are not yet completely free either. Just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to share with you one last thought, not directly related to Yehuda and Binyamin, or Yehuda and Yosef, but we find a little bit later on that when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers in one of the most dramatic moments, I think anywhere in world literature, Lahavdil, certainly in the Torah literature, he said, "Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai, v'lo yochlu echav lanos oso, ki nivhalu mipanav." The Torah describes how, with those words, "Ani Yosef," the brothers were completely overwhelmed. They couldn't respond. Nivhalu mipanav. And we have on this pasuk, we have a statement in the Gemara in Chagiga, "Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatochecha." Ha'ud avichai. Yosef said, "Ani Yosef, ha'ud avichai." And everybody was dumbfounded, just devastated. So the Gemara says that this somehow foreshadows or alludes to the future judgment after 120 years. And imagine if the brothers of Yosef, and he was the youngest of them nearly, if they were so overwhelmed by his rebuke, they couldn't respond. Imagine what's going to be after 120 years when a person stands before the heavenly tribunal and he is called to account for everything that he has done. Din v'cheshbon, what's going to be? So there's a famous comment here, Rebbe Salevi, which he says, where do you see the tochacha here? Where do you see that Yosef condemns them? On the contrary, he comforts them. And he says, don't worry, it was all part of the divine plan. All he says here is, "Ha'od avichai." "Vayom Yosef, ha'od avichai." "V'lechu echav lanos oso." So he says as follows. If you think about it, this is a very strange question, "Ha'od avichai." I mean, maybe it was just an exclamation. If you take it as a question, then it doesn't really make that much sense, because the brothers had never had any chance to get back to Canaan to find out about the well-being of their father. They were only there in Mitzrayim a short while before. They had a similar dialogue at that time. They said, yes, he's still alive. Then they left. Then they were immediately summoned back, because, as we know, Binyamin had been framed. So when Yosef says again, "Ha'od avichai," what's he asking about? They don't have any opportunity for any updated information. So the question is maybe a rhetorical question. So the Beis HaLevi says that where is the tochacha here? The tochacha here is the most devastating tochacha around. Because the word tochacha is related to the word nochach. Nochach means opposite. That is to say, zel umat zeh, to contrast two things. Nochach implies the contrast. When they said ha'od avichai, when he said ha'od avichai, what he meant was this. He says, you have just been telling me, Yehuda, at great length and in such a compelling, heart-rending manner, how you have such concern for your father, because your father has only one son who's left from that mother and he loves him so much. And you say, it would just be the worst thing for us to be the ones to be responsible for our father's heartache and the pain and the anguish. We wouldn't want to do that. We would do anything rather than harm our father because he has a son to whom he's so devoted. So Yosef said, if you're so concerned about our father, then why weren't you concerned when you sold me into slavery? Ha'od avichai. Is my father still alive? If he's still alive when after selling me down the river, then why are you coming along and saying, oh, we would never want to do something like this to our father? You know, it would be unthinkable. It would be such a terrible crime. What about our aged father? So the Beis HaLevi says that tochacha means, like we have the expression, din v'cheshbon. You know, din is a person is called to account for what he did. Cheshbon is he's called to account for what he could have been doing in the time that he did the Avera. It's like a person says, you know, I'm too busy, especially it's holiday time, I don't want to go to a shir of course, present company excluded from this government. You know, I don't want to go to the shiur. I've got, you know, I don't have energy. She says, okay, you don't have energy. You're too busy. You don't have energy or whatever it is. But at the time that you didn't go to the shiur, you had enough energy to go to the cinema, you know, or you had enough free time to engage in some recreational activity. So the tochacha is that Yosef forces them to confront their own inconsistency, their own hypocrisy. And when it suits them, they say, oh, we've got such concern for our father and for his anguish. And when it doesn't suit them, said Yosef, you sold me into slavery. We didn't trouble you at that time, apparently, very much at all. So the this dramatic parsha and the imagery here, which is so vivid and so compelling, contains within it lessons not only for Klal Yisrael as a whole, but doubtless for each one of us as individuals. Thank you very much for that.